The Asian Classics Institute presents Lojung, Developing the Good Heart with Geshe Michael Roach, recorded live in New York City in June of 1998. This is the beginning of Class 4.
In his great Lam Rim, the Lam Rim Nam Rim Lachang, the gift of liberation. He calls it the greatest lojong ever written. Okay? So it's a very beautiful lojong, a very important lojong. The name of it is Lojong Dun Duma. Please say Lojong.
Lojong.
Dun.
Duma.
Lojong.
Dun.
Duma.
Duma.
Lojong means, again, translated as mental training, but again, lo means, here refers to Changchu Gisem, Bodhicitta, and Jong means, trying to develop it, like trying to develop a good heart, or something like that, okay? So Lojong means that. Dun means points, important points, and then Dun means seven, okay? Dun Ma, as we've often seen, as with the Heart Sutra, books about wisdom or knowledge have a feminine ending, okay? So Ma has an ending. So it means the seven points on developing a good heart, okay? The Lojong called the seven points on developing a good heart. I went crazy trying to find out who wrote it, okay? Which would, it's kind of strange considering this is supposed to be the most famous Lojong, the most important Lojong. So I'm like going crazy trying to find out who wrote it. We have in the computer a lot of catalogs. We have 4,000 pages of catalogs. So one catalog says that Gyaltse Tome Sambo wrote it. He lived in the 1200s. Another catalog says Serlingbo wrote it. He was Atisha's teacher, one of his teachers. Another catalog says Atisha wrote it, Lord Atisha wrote it. Another catalog says Chikawa wrote it. There's some lineage trees that we find in the computer that say Tubuang wrote it, okay? There's Tubuang, you should write that, okay? He's the first person who's credited with it. Who's Tubuang? The Buddha himself. Alright? So it's like you have a You have a 1,700-year spread to choose from. 17 centuries apart, okay? Now, who are we going to believe? Right. So I started studying it more and more. I started reading more and more texts. I went to Ken Rinpoche. I said, who wrote the Lojong Duduma? I mean, I'm embarrassed because this is a famous Lojong. He says, you know, I don't know. Maybe Chikawa wrote it, you know. This is a Kadampa Geshe. And, you know, so we're like, he's like, I don't know. Maybe Chikawa wrote it. So we're studying it and reading it and looking at it. And I came across a very beautiful biography. It's called Lamrim Lamagipi Namtar, which means the history of the Lamrim teachers. And there's a beautiful story about Geshe Chikawa. And I'll give you his name. There's his full name. His dates, by the way, are 1101 to 1175. Say Kadamba, Geshe, Chikawa, Yishi, Dorje. Okay. Kadamba, you know, refers to the early Buddhists of Tibet. You are the Kadampas of America, okay? And it's not inappropriate that the group in England, you know, in recognition of the fact that they are the first Western Buddhists, or we are among the first Western Buddhists, then they're calling the group the Kadampas, which is fine. You know, that's a good, very appropriate. If they hadn't done it, I probably would have stole it myself. Geshe is, in those days, it was not a monastic title. It was, it meant a Kadampa who had studied a lot, someone who knew a lot, and a spiritual friend. It was sort of a title for an early Tibetan Buddhist who was very learned. Okay, Chikawa. I believe Chikawa is probably his place name. It's like calling him the Virginian or the New Yorker, okay? And there's a lot of different spellings of that. Some people spell it Aocha. Some people say Chekapa, okay? Different spellings of his name. And then Yeshe Dorje is his full name. Okay, Yeshe Dorje. Yeshe means wisdom. Dorje means diamond, okay? Diamond wisdom, all right? And I start to read, they say, well, it sort of started with the Kadampa Geshe Chikawa. So I start to read Chikawa's life story to see if anywhere in there it says he wrote the seven-point Lojong. And I read and I read, and there's this beautiful thing, and I thought you'd like to hear some of it. He was a very great scholar. Very early in his life, like from the time of 7 or 8 years old, he started studying. He knew a lot. He reached a point before, he was in his 20s. He had already memorized 100 major scriptures by heart. He could recite them, and he understood the meaning of them. And then the text is very interesting. I have it here. It says, I'll quote it. Tuki ding nang ye pa chang gya wa la chi shen chi ye ye gong de. Which means, at the bottom of his heart, after memorizing 100 scriptures, after studying all these things in depth, he felt like he was missing something to reach Buddhahood. You know, like, he was already a great scholar and very accomplished saint. And at the bottom of his heart, he felt something was missing. Gong de tuki ting mi de shing. And he was troubled. You know, he couldn't sleep. He couldn't be happy. He felt like something in his life was missing. Toma chuba shi nama chung. And then he had the good fortune to meet another Geshe and study the 8 verses, the Lojong in 8 verses. Okay, so that, you know, after memorizing 100 major scriptures, he gets this little 8 verse thing. Okay, and he freaks out, you know, and he's like, that's what I've been waiting for. That's what I need. And he's like very, very excited. And these are the days of the Kadampas. They were like Wild West. And people would go to India and learn some scripture and come back to Tibet. And then they would trade notes. It was very, very exciting. It was like people going to India now. And one would study Vinaya, and one would study logic, and one would study Madhyamika, and one would study perfection of wisdom. And they would master it and come home, and then they would teach each other. If you try to draw a lineage tree of the Kadampas, it looks like a tumbleweed. you know, you can get really confused trying to draw. It's not like a nice org chart. It looks like this because they were teaching each other. So he sets off to Lhasa to find who? Diamond Lion, right? So he's still, this is their contemporaries. So he's like sets off to Lhasa to try to find Dorje Senge, Diamond Lion. He's going to find the person who wrote this book. He's just freaked out about it. He's willing to give up everything. He leaves his home and he goes to Lhasa because he hears Dorje Senge is there, Diamond Lion. He gets to Lhasa. Dene Langri Thampa La Dene Jel De Chende. He gained great faith in Langri Thampa, which is another name for Diamond Lion. And he went to meet him. Chente Lhasa Tetu. He reached Lhasa, looked around for him. Langri Thampa De Serwa. And people told him he's already passed away. He's already dead. You know? And he freaks out again. He says, now I can't learn the 8 verses from the person who wrote it. Okay. And then he asked around, he says, who of his lineage, you know, which of his students is still around, you know, who I could learn the 8 verses from? Who is there that I could get to know, and maybe, you know, who among them is the most learned and most understands the most? And it boils down to 3 different great Kadampa scholars. And then they tell him, but there's a problem of those 3 in Lhasa. And it's known to be an open problem between them, that they're all struggling to get densa. Densa in those days meant the position of the throne. You know, who's going to be the number one man after Diamond Lion has passed on? You know, and he says there's some trouble going on, you know. There's like some kind of thing going on around between the 3. And he hears about that and he gets all depressed. And he says, you know, if these people are trying to practice Lojo, and there's a problem between the 3 main people, like who's going to be his next in line, you know, then I'll go to Langri Thang itself. Like this is this plane out in Ambo somewhere or something. It's this big, you know, it's like going out to Utah or something. And he's like, well, he's all depressed. And then he starts packing up and getting ready to go. And then somebody comes in and says, why are you going? And he says, I heard about the problem between the 3 guys and who wants to be the next in line, and these people aren't practicing Lojong and all. He says, wait a minute, you didn't get the problem straight. You know, you didn't hear the problem. He says, they're all struggling to give it to the other guy. <You know? laughs> And he says, they're perfect Diamond Lion followers. You know, and they say, Langri Tambagi Shunje Jesh Shupa means, these are perfect Lojong practitioners, and the struggle is going on is that each one says he's too stupid to be the throne holder, and the other guys are more intelligent and more wonderful and more talented, and he's just a schmuck, and they should take the throne. And that's the nature of the problem going on, you know. So then he's all happy and he decides to stay in Lhasa. This is the story. Then he meets a geshe named Sharawa, and I'll give you his name. Say Sharawa. Sharawa. Sharawa appears to be a grandson of Lord Atisha. Okay? There's one great lama called Potoa between Atisha and Sharawa. So he's the spiritual grandson of Lord Atisha. So he goes to Sharawa and asks him, can he teach him Lojong? Can he teach him Dharma? He teaches him for 12 years. And he teaches him all the great scriptures of India. All the great philosophy books, Madhyamika, Prajnaparamita, Pramana, Vinaya, and Abhidharma. And he becomes a master of those books. Then he learns all the Lamrim. And Sharawa is, for 12 years during that time, teaching Lamrim in public assemblies to the people. And they're going through Lamrim all the time and studying it. And then one day, apparently, Geshe Chikawa goes to Sharawa, and Sharawa says, you know, I've decided that you are worthy to hear the secret Dharma, the real thing now. Now you are worthy. And he taught in the Lojong Dunduma. Okay? So up until the time of Geshe Chikawa, this was a secret book. And that's why you can't find out who wrote it. That's why I went crazy trying to find out who wrote it. Like, there comes a time in their relationship when Geshe Sharawa comes to Geshe Chikawa and says, okay, now I think you're ready for the Lojong. You know, after all those years, you know, you're ready for Lojong now. Now I'll teach you Lojong. And he teaches him Lojong. And he becomes a lineage holder of the Lojong Dunduma. Okay? The 7-point Lojong. And then I thought you would like to see the secret lineage that's been written down, okay? And I'll show you some of the major lamas who passed down the 7 points. The 7 points, Geshe Chikawa wrote them down as 7 points, but he organized them into 7 points. But they were being passed down secretly in groups of 2 or 3 or less from lama to student, from lama to student. And it starts with Lord Buddha. Okay? So we trace the lineage back to Tubong. Tubong means, Tupe Wangmo means the king of all kings or something like that. Okay? King of the able Buddha. That's Lord Buddha.
The next person in the lineage of this text that you're going to study today is Champa. He looks pretty young.
What's the Sanskrit for Champa? Maitreya. Okay. So, he was the next one to get it. Okay? In the time of the Buddha, a bodhisattva named Maitreya. Alright? Next person in line to get this teaching. Then it goes down to Togme Kuche. Say, Togme? Kuche. Togme? Kuche. In Sanskrit, the negative is A. It starts out a word like agnostic, comes from Sanskrit. Atheist comes from Sanskrit. Ignorance used to be an A, came from Sanskrit. So, me is A, and tok means sangha. Okay? So, his Sanskrit name is a sangha, okay, for togme. Kuche means the two brothers, okay, the Asanga brothers, okay, so Tome Kuche means the Asanga brothers. So they're really referring to Asanga plus who? Master Vasubandhu, okay. Masters, okay. They were half brothers, okay. They lived about 350 A.D. If you look at the great books, Asian classics, studied in the monasteries in Tibet, they wrote about half of them. Between these two brothers, they wrote the Abhidhamma Kosha, the Abhisamalankara, and many of the other books that we use. All of the mind-only texts were written by Sangha, written down by a Sangha. Okay? Their mother was the same, their fathers were different. Their mother was a nun, and she had a vision that if she were to bear children, that they would become great Buddhist saints, great scholars, and that she should have one child with a king and one child with a Brahmin. And she obeyed the vision, you know, probably at great personal cost, you know, probably people thought she was crazy or like a crazy woman or something, I don't know. But anyway, these were her two sons. Vasubandhu wrote the Abhidhamma Kosha and other great works on Bodhisattva's life. And then Asanga wrote he helped Maitreya, he was the secretary for Maitreya's 5 great books, okay? Including the Abhisamankara. We spent 12 years on that in the monastery. We spent 4 years on the Abhidhamma Kosha. Rinpoche taught it for 10 years. Okay. Turned out to be a pretty good deal. Okay. Sir Lingba. Sir means gold. Ling means, like Rashi Gempa Ling means an isle, an island. And the Golden Island, this is the Lama of the Golden Island, Sir Lingba. That was Sumatra. And when Lord Atishar was looking around to find the Bodhisattva lineage, the lineage for the teachings on Bodhicitta, he found out about Sir Lingba, Lama Sir Lingba, and went to study with him. So he's the grandfather of the Bodhisattva traditions. They came to Tibet because of Sir Lingba. Sir Lingba taught Lord Atishar, and then he passed it on to the Tibetans. Okay. His other name is Dharmakirti, and it's not the same Dharmakirti as the logician Dharmakirti, so be careful. You might see both. Okay. Next we have Jowoje. This should be an O. Jowoje is another name for Lord Atisha. Okay? Jo means the Lord. J means the Lord. Okay? Alright, Lord Atisha. Okay, Jowoje. I don't have dates for selling, but there may be dates for selling, but I couldn't find them easily. But he taught Lord Atisha, so he must have overlapped. Probably he was active in the early 1000s, you know, 1000s. Then we come down to Dromtimba, Dromtenje. This is Atisha, Lord Atisha's most famous disciple. His dates are ? Dromtimba is Lord Atisha's most famous disciple. A lot of people say he was an emanation of a tantric deity. He was like always showing up with the money at the right time. He was always showing up with horses and donkeys and big bags of sampa. And he never became a monk. He was a Ginyan. He was a lifetime layman's vow holder. And is, for our lineage, is the first and one of the greatest Tibetans that ever passed the lineage on. So we owe a lot to him. He was the great facilitator of Atisha's mission to Tibet. You know, Atisha couldn't even speak Tibetan when he got to Tibet. And Dromtenje is helping him to spread, to start the Dharma in Tibet. So we owe a lot to him. Okay. He had a student named Hotoa. Was a Geshe. Okay. In the time of Dromtenje, they start teaching Lamrim publicly. But still, Lojong is secret. Lojong is still being passed on secretly from teacher to student in groups no larger than 2 or 3 people. And only very selectively. They study the student, they watch them for years. And then they decide they are worthy of learning the Lojong. Okay? And I, you know, I was curious why was it secret? You know, it's not Tantra, okay? I mean, it's not a tantric teaching. And I was curious why it was secret until the time of, and then by the way, Potoa taught it to Chikawa, okay, Geshe Chikawa, okay? So I was wondering, I'm sorry, Sharawa, who taught it to Chikawa, okay? So actually it's the great-grandson of Lord Atisha. And I'm like wondering, what is it about the Lojong that they felt that it had to be secret, you see? And up to the time of Geshe Chikawa, so it means from 500 BC until 1100 AD, this is 1600 years, somebody is feeling that Lojong shouldn't be taught publicly to normal people. And there's I finally found there was a text that talked about it. It talked about why it was kept secret all that time. And it's kind of interesting. It says, it quotes Shantideva, Master Shantideva's book, and it says, most people are not ready for the idea of exchanging themselves and others. He said, the students, they couldn't find enough students who were ready for the idea that you should spend your whole life concentrating on what will help other people, rather than concentrating on what will help yourself. Okay? The whole idea of devoting every minute of your day and every resource you have, every thought that you take, devoting it to other people, making sure other people get what they want and what they need, was too deep for people to have it taught publicly, and they would diss it. You know, I mean, either verbally they would diss it, or worse, mentally they would say, "This is a stupid idea." You know what I mean? Because the currency of the world is to watch out for number one. You know what I mean? The instinct of humankind is to take care of yourself first and to make sure you have what you want and the things that you need. And the idea, the concept of taking care of other people, devoting your whole life to other people, is so Einstein. You know, it's beyond most people, and they will disrespect that concept. If you try to teach a group of people, then a certain percentage of people in that room will say, "That's crazy, that's stupid. You know, why should you do that?" You know, it doesn't, I mean, not so many people will go home and say, "Oh, we had a Lojong class tonight, and he was talking about I should help everybody else." I mean, in America, you just say, well, you pay it lip service, right? You say, "Oh, it sounds nice, you know, it's very noble. I'd like to be able to do that. That's a nice idea." And then you just forget about it, you know. Which means in the bottom of your heart, you don't really consider it something that you should start doing tonight. That everything you do during the day, from the time you wake up to the time you fall asleep, should all be motivated at giving what other people what they need. Especially Dharma, you know, that your whole reason for being and your whole reason for staying on this planet is to give other people what they need, and this continual outflow of stuff from you. And no thought about what can they give you or what can you get out of it or something like that. That it was too profound and it shouldn't be taught in public because the public wasn't ready for it. Okay? And then Geshe Chikawa, it's hard to understand his thoughts on it, but it seems to be that he felt, it seems to me almost self-deprecating at that point, because he says, "Who am I to guess who might be ready?" You see what I mean? He felt like maybe there'd be 10 people in this room that are ready, but I couldn't judge it properly. Or, you know, I'm too much of a schmuck to keep it secret anymore. I might make the wrong judgment. And then some holy person or some holy being who needs this teaching might be deprived of it. So I'd rather teach it to a bunch of wrong people than miss a couple of important people. So I'm going to start teaching it publicly. And that's when the Lojong Dzogchenma broke out into public. And that's why it's so hard to figure out who wrote it. Okay, he was the first person to teach it publicly. And then it comes down through a very beautiful lineage, and it branches out into all of the lineages of Tibet. Like the Kagyus study this text very deeply, and many other traditions. There is a Gyaltse Tome Sambo around the late 1200s who is so much connected with this teaching that in some of the catalogs I was reading, he's credited as the author of it. He's the person who wrote it down. Muchu Dhammabhadra, who's very dear to our Vajrayogini lineage, and very dear to the regular students here have been fed a lot of Muchu Dhammabhadra, and his student, Yangchen Gawin Lodru, who's very important for Sera J Monastery. You've been getting a lot of Muchu Dhammabhadra. He is one of the main holders of this Lojong. This Lojong is very powerful going through Muchu Dhammabhadra. Then it comes down to Pabokur Rinpoche, who, if you read his Nam Rim, spent many, many pages on explaining it. And then finally down to Chijang Rinpoche, Kyabje Chijang Rinpoche, who is Ken Rinpoche's main lama and the main lama of the current Dalai Lama. So it's very much our lineage. You know, it's very much a strong tradition in our lineage. I can't spend more than 2 classes on it, which is you can't do much in 2 classes. We'll go through the 7 points. And I thought we would concentrate on the hard parts. Okay? I mean, there's about 12 or 15 verses worth of stuff. I'd say about 4 or 5 of them are so difficult that if I just give you the reading and you go home with it, you might pass it on wrong. Okay? So I'm going to concentrate on the hard parts tonight. We're just going to do the first 3 or 4 points, and we'll be focusing on the verses that are difficult and the ones that are sort of, you know, like very mystical and could be misunderstood. And we don't want them passed on in a misunderstood way. If you just read them, it might be confusing and you might teach other people the wrong thing. And I fear that in some instances this teaching might be misunderstood. It might be passed on in some sort of a way which is not correct, especially with the emptiness part. Okay? So we're going to concentrate on the hard parts. Okay? This is very galupa. And you don't have to be shy about it. You know, the lineage of the Dalai Lamas and Jetsokapa, we like to concentrate on the hard stuff. Okay? So here we go. I'm going to first just give you the 7 points, one by one, and then we'll start explaining them, okay? This is the first of the 7 points. Say, Ngundo, Dengi, Chö, Demba. Ngundo, Dengi, Chö, Demba. Ngun means before, Dro means to come. Lundro means preliminaries. And you've heard the word Lundro in many different contexts. Oftentimes it refers to a set of spiritual practices like 100,000 mandala offerings, 100,000 prostrations, etc. There's a set of them. That is, in some traditions, is very much emphasized as a method of softening yourself up to start your Dharma studies. Okay, this is not what it refers to here. I'll go into what the preliminaries are later. Dengi Chö means foundation Dharma. Okay, foundation Dharma. This is the Dharmas. These are the Dharma thoughts or the attitudes. Like all Dharmas, it's attitudes and less Dharmas than attitudes. Wait, okay. Somebody asked Rinpoche if there is a Tibetan God bless you, and he said, "Oh, we say Gyabshu." And he explained this to this guy who came to visit us one day. And then later, I asked him, "What does Gyabshu mean?" He says, "Well, Gyab means to shut it. Shik means shut it." You know. Anyway, Dengi Chö Demba. Demba means to teach them, okay? So it's instructions on the foundation dharmas, the foundation attitudes that you need before anything, okay? Preliminaries, okay? And these are not so much practices as attitudes, okay? They are contemplations that you should do before you get to the main event. The main event in Tibetan is called Ngushi. Say Ngushi, Changchubgi, Sem, Jongwa. Ngushi, again, is always opposed in Tibetan to two other things. Lundro, which means the warm-up. Ngushi, which means the main event. And then the Jela, or the conclusion. So Ngushi means the main event. It means the main thing, the main practice. Okay. In the study of concentration or meditative states, it refers to a certain kind of meditative state, meaning the main meditative state. And there are preliminary meditative states, and then there are subsequent meditative states. And in the study of meditation, it means a meditative state. But here it means the main practice. Okay, what is the main function of Lojong in the Lamrim structure? Where does Lojong fit in the Lamrim structure? Yeah. You thought you weren't raising your hand. Oh, you're in big trouble. No, sorry. Never yawn at the wrong time, okay? Where is it? Huh? Bodhicitta, developing bodhicitta, but where? There's two ways to develop bodhicitta, right? The seven-step practice and exchanging yourself and others. And this comes, Lojong's place in the Lam Rim is exchanging yourself and others. So this is going to be the main event. This is what... There's another name for this book, which is learning how to exchange yourself and others really. You know, how to really do it. You know, that's the alias. That's the AKA, also known as You know, when you, some of the catalogs say, the Geshe Chekawa's 7 points on how to exchange yourself and others. That's going to be the main event, all right? Changchukyesem is bodhicitta, okay? The decision to reach absolute total bliss on behalf of others. Twist my arm, okay? All right? I mean, that's all. The best thing you can do for others is to clean up your own mind, make it pure, reach a total state of bliss where you're surrounded by holy tantric deities, and then go and teach other people how to do it. You know, it's not like this obligation thing. Che omare da. It's not like some kind of boring obligation that you have to do. It's this exciting journey to total ecstasy in this life so that you can show other people how to do it. Okay? That's all. That's Changchukyesem. It's not like giving up the Michael and Zoe shake for others. Okay? It's like learning how to get zillions of them and hand them out to everybody. And there's a big difference between those two. You're not depriving yourself of anything. You're just getting to your ecstasy faster so you can help other people get it also. Okay? Zhonghua means to practice or to develop that state of mind. This is Lo Zhong. Okay? Remember, we had it the first class. This Sem is Lo. This Zhong is Zhong. Okay? That's the Lo Zhong. How to develop the good heart. Okay? And again, the first few times I heard mental training, I thought, I went to Dharamsala, I was in a bus, I got where's the Golden Temple? Amritsar. And people told me, Geshe Dage is going to teach you mental training. And I'm like, oh great, I'll get my IQ increased, you know. It's not like that. It's how to develop a good heart towards other people. Okay? That's going to be the main event. By the way, those of you who are a little sophisticated about it know that there's two versions of bodhicitta. The word Changchukyesem has two absolute different meanings. One is kunzop and one is dundam. One is kunzop and one is dundam. Kunzop means the deceptive one, meaning the normal everyday version of the wish for enlightenment, which means wanting to reach your own enlightenment for the sake of others. That's the bodhicitta you're usually hearing about. That's version A of bodhicitta. Version B is much deeper. What's that? What's dundam chinchangisem? What's the ultimate bodhicitta? Direct perception of emptiness. Okay? Bodhicitta, two different states of mind go by the name of bodhicitta. Okay? Regular bodhicitta is the wish to reach your own ecstasy so you can take other people there. Ultimate bodhicitta is the direct perception of emptiness. Anybody who wants to be a bodhisattva should have both. Okay? And you gotta get to both. And this Munshi, this main event, is going to cover both of them. Okay? This one is not restricted to the practice of loving others. It's also seeing emptiness directly. Okay? They're both are gonna come here. Number three. Say Kien Ngen. Changchun, Kilamdu, Kierwa. Okay. Kien means here, it means circumstances. Okay, normally it means a factor, a secondary cause. Here it means circumstances. Okay? Kien means circumstances here. Ngen means lousy, bad. Okay? Kien means bad things that happen to you. Lousy things that happen to you. Problems. Changchub means Buddhahood, enlightenment. Lam tu kierwa means to transform them into the path for enlightenment. Okay, so if you want to translate this in plain English, what's the name of that great Lama Sopa's book? Transforming problems into the path of Buddhahood or something like that, okay? That's exactly what he's talking about. Number three of the 7 points, okay? Turning the problems of your life into a ticket to enlightenment. Okay? We could all use that, right? If you can't beat them, join them, right? I mean, if you can't stop the problems right away, well then at least you learn how to use them as a vehicle to get enlightened, okay? And how to transform them into a vehicle to get enlightened, okay? Lamdu Kherawa means turn them around into a path rather than being an obstacle. The obstacle becomes the path. The blockade you use as a path, okay? It's a kind of a cool idea. It's like skateboarding down the thing that's crossing the highway, that what are those guard things? It's like getting up and riding on it rather than breaking through it, you know what I mean? And you turn it into, you ride on it rather than trying to bust through it. You use it, okay, like that, okay? By the way, those of you who are studying the Dakye, when they say kusum lam kir, this is the expression. Lam tu kirwa means to turn those three events in your death into a lam kir, for kusum, the three bodies of a Buddha. That's where it comes from, lam de kirwa. Okay. Number four. Say, Seichiki, Nyamlen, Chilne, Temba. Seichiki, Nyamlen, Chilne, Temba. Seichik means one human life. One lifetime, a whole lifetime. You can say a whole lifetime. Say chik. Nyamlen means spiritual practice in the sense of a practice as opposed to theory. Nyamlen means putting it into actual practice. Okay? It's always opposed in Tibetan to the theory of enlightenment. Nyamlen means nuts and bolts. Okay? Nyamlen means actually doing it. Jilne Temba means instructions. Jilne. Jilne is a tough word that means it means like all wrapped up into one. Okay? Now, even when you wrap a package, it's called til. That gamdi chigure means I have to wrap the package. So it means wrapped up into one. Step number four of the seven are these brief, tiny little sentences where you get a whole lifetime of practice expressed in a nutshell. How's that? Jilne Temba means in a nutshell. Okay. Say lo jongbe se. Is this misspelled? Isn't lo jong, those of you who are studying Tibetan, isn't that how you spell lo jong? Right? Is this misspelled? No. Okay. It's a verb. Here. It's a past tense. Past tense. By the way, those of you who are studying Tibetan, when there's a secondary sa on a verb, almost always past. Past participle, like very past. Okay? Lo chongba means done developing the attitude. Finished developing the mind. Developed a good heart. Okay? Done. And that's why it's spelled differently here. Okay? Done. Finished developing the good heart. Se. Se is a very, in this case, it's an idiomatic way of saying, at what point can you say that a person has successfully developed this state of mind? How do you know when you got it? Okay? Like, in the Lamrim, Yinsen Kun de Tapa Dunya Lo Jingna De Teng Yen Jum Kyo Lak, how do I know when I have renunciation? Nyinsen kundu tapa dunya lo. When you are fixated night and day on getting out of this crap, you've got renunciation. Okay, that's a te. See, te means how do you know that you've reached that point? So point number five is really cool. He's going to tell you, you reach this point, you've got it. Lo jong, you know, you jonged your lo. Okay, when you've reached this point, he's going to tell you the te. Te means when you've reached that point. In this case, that's what it means. Okay. Say lojong ki tamsik. Lojong ki tamsik. Here lojong means trying to develop a good heart. Tamsik means pledges or promises you have to make to yourself. Okay, I make the following resolutions or promises or pledges. Okay, tamsik means pledges, things you've decided to keep. It's defined as dodo mirunga. Things you should never give up. Once you decide to do it, never give it up. Okay? Tamsik means promises to yourself, which are the hardest to keep, right? That's a Damsik. Okay? Lojong ki Damsik. Say Lojongi Lapcha. Lojongi Lapcha. Lojong again means the practice of developing a good heart. Lapcha means like advice, okay? Like certain kinds of advice about how to do it. Oftentimes in a teaching, for example, when a monk takes ordination, at the very end, they say, by the way, okay, you're a monk now. The ceremony's over. You sat here and sweated in those robes for 3 hours. Here's a few little tricks to keeping your vows. That's called lapcha. Lapcha means, hey, between us, here's a little few tricks of the spiritual trade. You know, and then they go through and they give you a few little short, cool advices about how to keep the lojo, how to keep doing it, okay? And that's called lapcha. Those things are called lapcha, okay? By the way, those of you who are studying Tibetan, lapcha can also mean the rules. For example, bodhisattva vows are often called lapcha. Okay? Those vows are called lapcha. So you have to not mistranslate. You have to, when you see it written down, you have to know which one they're talking about. We're going to take a break. I'd like each of you to get the reading. If you have a few minutes, look through the dark, the bold print and read through them. There's only a few lines. And look it through. You're going to see some really weird ones. Those are the ones we're going to talk about tonight. Okay, so look it over. Come back in about 10 minutes, okay? I think there's a couple of announcements I was supposed to make, and I don't remember them. But I remember one of them. I think I mentioned we have a sponsor. One of the sponsors of Godsto has offered. They came to us and asked us if they could throw a fundraiser for us, and we didn't have to do anything. So I said, well, I guess. And they have a. They're close to, I think I mentioned it, a troupe of flamenco dancers that I went and saw last year, and they were really, really good. A group of us went, and they're called Noche Flamenco. And they come every summer, and they do their thing at St. Mark's Place. And what's it? First Avenue, right? What's that place called? I don't know. 8 St. Mark. Oh, it's called 8 St. Mark's. Okay. And it's a small theater, it's 160 people, and they sell out for 2 months. And they've offered us one night of the proceeds. But what they're going to do is charge $100 a ticket. I think the normal tickets are like 25 or something. So anyways, just to let you know, I asked them if they could do something afterwards for us normal people. And they said they'd think about it, so I'll have some announcements on that. But there's about three kinds of students here. One is real broke, one is broke, and one still has room on their credit card. So if you're the third kind, please consider buying a ticket. It was at their they initiated it, and it'd be nice if, I told them we could probably get 20, 30 people to go, you know, among the 4,000 people on our mailing list. You know. I suppose that many could probably do it. It's July 8th. I think it's a Wednesday night. And all the proceeds will go to building our nunnery up at Godsto. So we have a site picked out. They have pigged the best site before the monks could get their act together. And they already have, and the plan is to build a small, a modest little place where the nuns could start doing retreats there and stuff like that. And some very beautiful architects from Mongolia who have built some nunneries in Mongolia have offered to do all the architectural work. When I was in Mongolia, they came and showed me some of the nunneries they've built, and they're very, very beautiful. And then they offered to do all the architectural work, you know, so that'll be like free or Mongolian wages are like $75 a month or something, and they're very excited about it. They're very excited about planning it and doing it. And the weather is very similar. I mean, Mongolia is very cold in the same way, so they were very excited about it. So it'll be for that. If you can go, it'd be nice. I'm trying to get them to do some kind of a thing where a few of the guitar players come afterwards, maybe someplace else, and could play for us normal people. But if there's any way you could do it, it'd be fun to do it. Okay, so try. It'll be July 8th. That's pretty smooth, right, drummer? Okay. I hope you've had a few minutes to look over the dark print, the bold print. I think I would like to talk about a few of the difficult points. Page 3 of the reading, okay? The first line looks pretty easy. It says, train yourself first in the preliminaries, okay? And that's all. The whole Lojong Dunduma. You know, if you want to be really smart, if you're on a bus or a subway sometime and somebody says, do you know Lojong Dunduma? You say, yeah. And you say, well, what's the first one? And you can say, train yourself in the preliminaries first. And that's it. That's the whole Lojong, okay? That's the whole thing, all right? And as you can see, it's not cleaning your room, putting out water bowls, anything like that. It's not that kind of preliminary. These are much harder. First one is recognizing the fact that you have a very wonderful, short, beautiful window of opportunity to do something now. And it will close quickly. You know, like I'm always, I'm going around and Ken Rinpoche's around, Art's around teaching great stuff. These classes are going on. It's easy to think that it's all like permanent or something. Forget it, you know. It can end any day and it will end abruptly. And then there wouldn't be anything like this going on. I find it kind of funny that I'm like, could you please come to class, you know. It's not like that. I mean, very rare to have classes. Very rare to have so many classes going on. Very rare to have so many chances to study with good people. And the first one is to just recognize that fact, that the window of opportunity is very short. Rinpoche hasn't taught in New York. The last time he gave regular teachings in New York was, I think, 1973. Okay? Something like that. It's hard. It's hard to find. Second, and you're healthy, and don't think that's permanent, okay? I mean, you're healthy now, you have a good mind, you're busy, but you're not too busy to get here. You see what I mean? You're busy, but you still have time to meditate and practice, and that can stop any time. You know, one good car accident, you know, one good AIDS virus, you know, it can all end very, very quickly, very abruptly. Now is the time. And to think like that, okay? Second one, meditating upon your death. I always tell people, death and rebirth is really easy to... it's hard to think about unless you've studied emptiness, unless you know that this world is your perception, that your own mind is creating this world. Then death does not become... Even if you tell people the only thing between you and your death is if your nose gets blocked up for 3 minutes, you're dead. You know, it's a miracle. For this many years, your nose didn't get blocked up. It's a miracle that you could feed yourself for this many years. You know, I got this old Chevrolet I'm trying to sell. It's like, if anybody wants to buy it, it's like 30 years old or something. It's all broken down. It's made of steel, and it's all broken down. Here I am, 10 years older than that poor thing. And it's amazing that I'm still here. It's amazing I'm still alive. And the same with you. It doesn't even take that long to die. It takes about 5-6 seconds for your mind to change. You see, it's not dying. It's not like your body has to die. It's a change in your mental state. And then you see yourself dying. It's very easy to die. It's too easy to die. And it can just go like that. And you have to keep that in mind. You have to do something now while you can. Third thing, meditate on the problems of... I found a good new word for samsara, vicious circle of suffering, okay? Really, I mean, the vicious circle is what korma means. It keeps perpetuating itself. You cannot be happy here. Nothing will go right here until you learn Dharma, especially until you learn your vows, that pratimoksha morality, bodhisattva morality, and tantric morality, until you learn those three, and until you keep your book well and sincerely. This is all going to be miserable. Nothing can go right here. Don't be amazed when things go wrong. You should be amazed when something goes right. Okay? I mean, the nature of this place is for things to go wrong. We are in a defective realm, you know. I have a friend called me and said, I just got out of jail. He's crying on the phone. He's weeping on the phone. My mother had to put a bail. I'm ruined my life. I made a boo-boo, you know. I hurt somebody. I just got out of jail. I don't know what to do, you know. I'm like, everyone hates me. And I said, listen, if you're in the desire realm and I'm in the desire realm, our mental states are just about the same. You know, the fact that your mental state is defective is proven by your presence in this room. You see what I mean? If you're in the desire realm, you have all of the mental traits that made Hitler famous and Mao Zedong and everybody else. You know, you are a millimeter away from being those people. If you are in this realm, I said, you know, he's feeling like a bad person. He got caught doing something bad. He was in jail. I said, don't worry about it. Like, we're about a millimeter away from you. We didn't get caught yet, you know. But everybody in this realm has some kind of problem. I mean, that's why you're in this realm. The day you see emptiness directly, you perceive the other two realms directly. And then you know you really are in a special realm. And it's the worst one. You know? And you are here because your mind is like that. And it's your mind which is producing this realm. So don't think you're much worse than anybody else here. You're not. Because their mind is producing the same realm. We're all messed up about 99% the same, you know. And it really is a defective realm. It doesn't work right. Nothing will ever work right here. You might as well just forget it. It can't work right here. You have to move to a different realm. You have to get out of this realm. You know, it's like being in a insane asylum. And you have to find the door as soon as you can. Because nothing's going to go right as long as you're in... It can't. Don't get frustrated trying to make things go right in this realm. It can't. It will never. You have to change it. And that's keeping your vows. Keeping your three sets of vows. Okay? But if you don't realize that you're in insane asylum, you can't break out. Okay? I mean, it's some kind of achievement for a crazy person to realize they're in an insane asylum. And we're trying to do that. You know, we are crazy people in an insane asylum trying to figure out that we're here. And that's the first step, is to figure out that you are. This is a defective, this realm will never work right. You know, just won't. Forget having a good job, money, enough to eat, all that. You can't even fit, it won't work. It'll never work here. Okay? You need to move out. You have to get going. Okay? That's the preparation. That's state of mind. So as you start this is a meditation manual. This Lojong is designed as a meditation manual. The whole thing is meant to be a meditation practice. People come up to me all the time, I need a meditation. Well, here you go, okay? Lojong Dunduma. It's enough for a sweet meditation. You know, I like to change my main meditation every 3 months or so. You know, I do Dongren for 3 months, then I do death meditation for 3 months. And I think you'll find that to stop from getting stale, it's good to introduce a new meditation. You might want to study this one. And it'd be a really nice one until the next series of classes. Like, next series of classes is in October. So you might want to work on that. By the way, we are planning some interim classes. Eric Colombell, who's a good Tibetan teacher, will be teaching intermediate Tibetan. Chuchen Pudzok will have the regular Wednesday meditation going on. And maybe you can talk him into doing a language class, but that's your problem. We're trying to get Rinchen Dalai to teach colloquial Tibetan again. And Gene Smith, who's a great scholar, has, for those of you who've taken Vajrayogini initiation, he's agreed to teach us about the lineage, which is not something that normally is taught. So those of you who have that initiation, he's agreed to give us an extended lecture about the lineage, because he's a Sakya scholar. He is a Sakya. And our early Vajrayogini lineage comes from the Sakyas. And in fact, we're going to study one of the most famous Lojongs, by one of the greatest, I think, Sakya of all time. We're doing that on Friday night. We'll do it in this class later on in the course, okay? Drop again soon. Okay, part two, number two. As you'll see on page three at the bottom, that's where you actually do the getting ready for meditation. You do your refuge. Making supplication means you visualize your lama and you ask for help. Okay. Very simple, very beautiful. you do your seven-part practice. That's the, if you've studied Ganden Hagyama, that's Ganden Hagyama. That's the seven steps of getting ready for meditation and then closing a meditation. If you don't know what they are, come on Monday night. We're covering them every Monday night, okay, at 6th Street. And then it talks about taking your meditation posture. Here the breathing meditation is 21 breaths rather than 10. 10 is designed for us. 21 we'll probably never be able to do. Okay. Page 4. The reason I wanted to go over the difficult lines is that this first verse here, the four lines, and the next one, I think this kind of stuff, I think this is why they kept the Lojong Duduma secret. These five lines, to me, should either be taught carefully or kept secret. Because this is the kind of teaching that someone who doesn't get a good oral tradition explanation will go for it and waste their time for 20 years trying to see the isness of the antidote, you know, or something like that. You know what I mean? Very dangerous, these lines, if they're not taught properly. So I want to go over the difficult lines with you and make sure you get them and that you teach your students properly. Okay? So here we go. It's not just some vague mystical thing, okay? The more you learn about mystical things, the more you'll learn that they boil down to Buddhist logic of all things, okay? It's all very logical. I mean, you really want to go to a mystical realm, study plain old logic, okay? All right, here we go. When it says, learn to see all things as a dream, this is talking about realizing that the outer world, and especially your body, is empty of having any nature of its own. Okay? It's a dream. It's an illusion. Okay? What does illusion mean? It does not mean that it's all not there and you can do whatever you want and, you know, some weird deity has created this illusion, net of illusion around you, and you just have to punch through it, and it doesn't mean that at all, okay? It means the way the world seems to work to you is not correct. It's an illusion. It's a dream, okay? You want to get rich? Don't go work hard. Don't go slave at some corporation. Give away your money as fastly and as beautifully and as effectively as you can, okay? You want to be healthy? Take care of other people. Don't go to the gym and don't buy vitamins. Okay? You want to be healthy? Go serve the sick and make sure other people are well. You know? You want to be beautiful or handsome? Meditate well. Think about compassion for other beings. It actually changes your inner energies and you do become that. Okay? I mean, you have to realize the real causation of things. And don't believe in the appearance of things. Okay? You want to get what you want, take care of other people. You want to get some handsome guy or some pretty girl, keep your sexual morality perfectly. Okay? You'll be beating them off. Okay? This is how the world really works, and everything else is an illusion. Okay? All that stuff about the world being created by different things, other things, is wrong. It's an illusion. Why? Because things are empty. And what's really making things happen is your own karma. That's what really makes things happen. Okay? And you have to get used to that. You have to get used to that. Somebody gave me that, I hate this goddamn question, you know. What about the roaches in my apartment, you know? They always ask me, right? Like I'm some roach expert. Okay? you know. I say, you want to get rid of roaches? The best way is to take care of someone else who needs a place to live. You know, if you want the place, your place where you live to be clean, your mind has to be clean and you have to be good to other people. That's how the roaches will go away. And they say, well, can I kill them? And I say, Buddhism says that a negative action cannot have a positive result. If you kill the roaches in your apartment, and if they are not there the next morning, it is not because you killed them. There's no cause and effect relationship between killing them and them not being there the next day. That's not why there's no roaches in your apartment. Killing them has nothing to do with them not being there the next day. If you're a Buddhist, you have to reject that line of thinking. There is no such thing. A bad action which harms another living being could never make your apartment beautiful. It's a totally impossible, total wrong view. Okay? And Jesus kept saying the same thing over and over again. You know, we're in good company, right? He said, you don't get lemons from oranges. You know, impossible. Don't even think about it. You don't plant watermelon seeds hoping for corn. It's impossible. You cannot have a clean apartment from the act of killing another sentient being. It doesn't work that way. There's no cause and effect relationship between those things. Nothing. Not the slightest bit. Prove it. They don't go away when you kill them all the time. That proves it's not cause and effect. Get it? Okay? If killing them got them to go away, they would never come back. They come back. Oh, but wait. They come back because my neighbor didn't kill his. Yeah. What created that? Why do you have a neighbor like that? I don't know, because his neighbor didn't kill his. No, not cause and effect, okay? You have to get used to that. Anything else is illusion. Believing that is illusion, okay? That's what it means. Learn to see all things as a dream. The outer world and your own body and all the problems in your life have come about through one thing only, your selfishness and your lack of lojong, your failure to practice lojong, your failure to develop a good heart. I mean, that's what lojong teaches. All the problems around you, traffic, pollution, dangerous parts of the city, roaches in your house, everything else, any problem you have, problems at work, are all created by the failure to think about other people's needs. Period. Okay? That's the first thing. To believe anything else, to believe that the bad things in your world came from any other thing, is an illusion. And that's what the first line means. Got it? Okay? It's not some nihilistic, cool, Sartrean thing. Okay? Sorry, you know. It just means you have to be a good person. Right? Number two, examine the nature of the mind unborn. And this sounds really cool because, you know, then you get somebody coming and to New York for a two-day teaching, and they say, okay, you guys, for the next 3 years until I can come back, just meditate on the unborn nature of your mind. And everybody goes home and goes crazy trying to figure out what's the unborn nature of your mind. It's only this. The first line is talking about your world and your body. They are like a dream because the things you think make your body healthy are not what makes it healthy. It's not food, it's not vitamins, it's not going to the gym. You want a healthy body? Take care of other people. You will have a healthy body. Okay. That's the first thing. You want to clean up your New York City? It's not by electing this mayor or that mayor. It's by watching your speech, for example. Okay? Very subtle. Okay? Line number two is talking about the true nature of your mind. Your mind is just like the city. Your mind is just like your body. Are you tired of being depressed? Do you have low self-esteem? Do you often feel anxious, anxiety? Do you feel unhappy? Do you feel nervous? You know, do you worry about the future? Does it seem like nobody loves you? You know, all these mental problems all stem from the same thing, not taking care of other people. So he's saying your mind also is just as empty as the outside world. And if you see something in your mind which is ugly or unpleasant, that also is a projection on an otherwise empty screen. The mind does not have any nature of its own. It's an unborn. In that sense, it's unborn. It's empty. If you experience your mind as something painful or depressed or unhappy or anxious, it's because you have made other people feel that way. You want to stop that? You don't have to go to $100 an hour psychiatrist. Just be good to other people. You know? And in fact, according to Buddhism, you cannot stop it any other way. There is no other way to take care of any kind of negativity in your own mind than to take care of other people and to think about what other people need. Okay? Period. We're going to put all these psychiatrists out of business. Anyway, they can come to class. We need more people to do the folders and stuff. Number three, I think, is particularly dangerous. The antidote itself is gone to is, okay? And frankly, you know, there were lineages in Tibet, there were traditions in Tibet where this became very catchy, it was very sexy, it was very cool, and the meaning seems to have gotten lost. You know what I mean? And they go around, oh, meditate on the isness, you know. And like, after about 3 weeks of that or 10 years of that, people are always showing up in my class and saying, what did they mean when they said meditate on the isness? I've been trying all this time, I don't get it, you know. Here's what meditating on the isness is, okay? The antidote itself is gone to is means, what is the antidote? It's the mind of wisdom which has done the first two lines, okay? We're to line number three now. Wisdom is the mind which understands what's going on in the empty outside world, your empty body, and your empty mind. And it realizes that the outside world, your body, and the condition of your psyche is a projection forced on you by your past karma. So that wisdom is number three. That wisdom is being talked about in number three. It's understanding what's really going on is the subject of number three. Okay? Understanding what's really going on is the subject of line number three. Then why does he say gone to is, you know? It sounds like Wizard of Oz or something, okay? What does it mean to gone to is? It means sooner or later, you're going to have to realize that wisdom itself is also empty. Okay? The wisdom which understands the emptiness of your world, the emptiness of your body, and the emptiness of your mind is itself empty. And it also is a projection being forced on you by your past good deeds. Okay? Not even the antidote is self-existent. Not even the wisdom which gets you out of the other problem is self-existent. Okay? Not only is the object on which your mind is focused empty, and not only is the mind itself empty, but the understanding in that mind is also empty. Meaning, it's also a projection. Understanding emptiness is itself a projection. Okay? By the way, he's flirting here with which one of the five paths. Okay, if I say Tsokjor Tonggo Milo, Tsokjor, say Tsokjor Tonggo Milo. Okay? Five levels of spiritual realization that every person in this room wants to go through. Tsok, basically achieving renunciation and bodhicitta. Jor, understanding emptiness intellectually. Tong, seeing it directly. Gom, using what you saw directly to wipe out your negativities. Milo, nirvana and Buddhahood. Which of these five paths has he just been describing? Yeah, number two. I mean, you're gaining intellectual understanding. Nobody in this room went into the direct perception of emptiness that I could see just now. Okay? I mean, I spoke about emptiness and you were like, oh, that makes sense, yeah. Outside world, yeah. Mind, yeah. My depression is a projection of my own mind. Yeah, I get that. Yeah, okay. You just went through a intellectual understanding that you perceived emptiness just now. Directly? I didn't say that. Okay? Intellectually, okay? Fine. Number four. Let it go in the essence, source of all things. Again, very sexy, very vague, very dangerous, you know? Get these lojongs all put into a book, pass them on in America, make that American Buddhism. I can't think of a worse way to ruin American Buddhism, okay? You need those other 13 notebooks also, okay? Lojong doesn't work. Remember Chikawa. Memorized 100 of those books, spent 12 years studying the classics, and then they let him study Lojong, right? Okay? Let it go in the essence, source of all things. Let it go here means two things. First, it means let it go means let the problems of meditation go. Meaning, try to overcome in your own mind the obstacles to perfect meditation. Let it go is a code word for you must overcome the obstacles to meditation. What obstacles to meditation? Mainly two, Qing and Gu. Qingwa and Gupa, right? Qingwa means, well, let's start with Gupa, it's easier. Gupa means distraction. When you're meditating in the morning and you think of, like me, my meditation is constantly ruined. I'm a busy person, I have the whole day planned out. My meditation, anyone who's like, working in an organized job or any kind of organized situation, this is the great demon in your mind every morning. What do I have to do at 4? I have that meeting at 3. The budget's not working out for, you know, Department X, you know, and your meditation is ruined by then. Or you start smelling breakfast from your neighbor's door, you know. And that's called gupa. Gupa means the mind gets distracted. Okay? That's an obvious one. That's an easier one. Chingwa, the opposite, means mental dullness. In its gross form, it's the result of eating too much or not getting enough sleep. And you know what it feels like. It's like the day I fell asleep in my room and hit my head on Punsok's closet. Okay? That's why we're taking the bed out. So I can land on something soft. The more subtle one, okay, the more subtle one is when you get very good at sitting very still and your breathing is very regular and your mind is just buzzed out and you're not thinking about anything clearly. This is much more dangerous. Much, much more dangerous. Okay? So letting it go in the fourth line on page 4 means let go of those two obstacles, meaning work your ass off and overcome them. Okay? It doesn't mean, you know, like relax. Okay? The other meaning of let it go is if you do that, and if you study emptiness properly, you will reach a point where you can let go of the perception of things as being self-existent. Okay? You will move into the direct perception that things are not self-existent. And that is tonglan. Okay? So from line 3 to line 4, you just went from an intellectual understanding to a direct perception of emptiness. That's cool. That's what line 4 means. Now, you go give these 4 lines to any normal American person who's interested in spiritual stuff. Could they get that out of those? Could they ever figure that out? I don't think so. You have to be careful who you teach the Lojong to. And you have to teach it correctly. Okay? It's plain old Abhidharma and Prajnaparamita and Madhyamika and Pramana with a little spice of Vinaya. Okay? Asian classics. And you have to study them. Okay? To understand these 4 simple lines. Okay? Then what's he got to do with this next one? Here's a weird one. In between sessions, be a figment of the imagination. Okay? Oh, I'm just a figment of the imagination. You know? I don't have to keep my morality anymore. Yay! All right? It doesn't mean that, okay? He's talking about a very specific spiritual level called jetop yeshe. Okay? Say jetop. Yeshe. It's so important I spelled it out for you, okay? Say jetop. Yeshe. What was path number 3? What was great spiritual level number 3? Tonglam, path of seeing, direct perception of emptiness in a deep state of meditation. Okay, extremely rare. If there's one person on this planet right now who has had that experience, it's amazing. Okay, jetop yeshe. Jetop yeshe is part 2 of that experience. Okay, jetop means subsequent, that which comes after. Yeshe means wisdom or state of wisdom. This refers to the, you could say, about 10 hours or 12 hours following the direct perception of emptiness. The direct perception of emptiness takes maybe 20 minutes. During the next 12 hours or so, you have these incredible spiritual realizations, which are collectively known as the 4 Arya Truths, badly mistranslated as 4 Noble Truths. Okay? You go through a group of experiences that can be organized into 4 groups called the 4 Arya Truths, misnamed the 4 Noble Truths. Okay? Arya meaning anyone who's seen emptiness directly. Okay? Noble is a bad translation of Arya. Okay? Something important to realize about that experience. Okay? Up to the time that you see emptiness directly, you are having mental impressions at the rate of 65 per finger snap. Okay? Count this. You just had 200 discrete mental impressions. Okay? In that much time, you've had 200 fleeting mental impressions, according to Buddhism. Kechik tama yehi. That's called kechik tama. Jadzoka kechik. You've had that many mental impressions. Okay? You have major mental impressions every few seconds, you know, like enough to say, I understand that sentence, or I like this milkshake, or stuff like that, okay? I mean, to form a whole thought happens every few milliseconds, okay? During the length of your life, you have not had a single correct perception during the length of your life, okay? If you multiply that times the number of hours and minutes and days and months and years of your life, not one of those impressions was accurate. And you realize that the day you see emptiness directly. Okay? That your belief that the things around you come from their side and not from your projections infects every single perception you have. You cannot have a perception until the day you see emptiness directly which is not infected by that belief. So much that we can say you have not had an accurate perception in your life unless you've seen emptiness directly. Okay. What happens when then you see emptiness directly, that is your first accurate perception in your life. Okay. Now what happens when you come down out of it? I'm afraid that you go right back into the same state. All right, frankly. Okay. When you come down out of the first direct perception, emptiness, back into jetopyeshi, back into the state of wisdom which is subsequent to seeing emptiness directly, you revert to your original state. You do not overcome the innate tendency to see things as self-existent. But there's one big difference. Before and after, there's one big difference. What is it? You know you're wrong. Okay? Like, you're looking at things and you're saying, I know I'm seeing them wrong. And I can't stop myself from seeing them wrong. But at least I know I'm wrong. I've made progress, you know. And then the next path, the whole fourth path, which typically takes 7 lifetimes if you don't practice Tantra, okay? The whole next path, for 500 years, say, you are using that knowledge to permanently overcome that tendency, okay? And when you overcome that tendency, finally, you've reached nirvana. That is nirvana, okay? That's what line number 5 is talking about, okay? During the period after you see emptiness directly, the whole world will look like a figment. You have to keep reminding yourself, I'm not seeing things right. They still look to be self-existent, but at least I know I'm wrong. That's the ultimate meaning of illusion in Buddhism. When the word illusion is used in Buddhism, this is the ultimate meaning of it. For a person who has seen emptiness directly, they know the world isn't what it looks like. But at least they understand that they're not seeing it right. Okay? So that one line is very, very deep. And never forget the real meaning of it. Okay? It doesn't mean go around thinking you're like Casper the Ghost. Okay? It doesn't mean that. Okay? And it especially doesn't mean that morality doesn't matter or something like that, which is a very evil way to teach this line. Okay? It doesn't mean that. It means for that kind of person at that high state, the world looks like that. It is a figment of, they know it's a figment of their imagination. Meaning, something forced on them by their past karma. A perception forced on them by their past karma. Okay? I know you'll never get it wrong. Okay. There's another part that I found difficult. By the way, at the bottom of page 4, is the root text one of the first mentions ever of the practice of Tonglen. Okay? The meditation called Tonglen. Those 2 lines at the bottom of page 4, which I've always thought were by Tongme Sambo, see? It was Tongme Sambo who publicized them very openly 200 years later, 180 years later, okay? This is Geshe Chikawa writing down these lines for the first time. Of the teachings on Tonglen. Apparently, even the teachings on Tonglen were secret until the time of Geshe Chikawa. Okay, and here you get one of the first open references of it. Okay, I'm not going to try to teach Tonglen tonight. It's too much. Okay, it's a practice where you meditate on taking the suffering of other people away from them in on your breath, and you use your breath to give them all wonder, all good things that they need. Okay, but it would take about. We did it in North Carolina. It took 22 hours of teaching, I think, to do it properly. And so I think we really should have a class on it in the next year and a half or something, like a weekend special or something like that, to do it properly. And we have a good notebook about it. We took all the teachings on it for the last 800 years and collated them into an instruction manual, which you can get. It's available, but you really should try to get the oral teaching. We should do it sometime. It's too much to do tonight, okay? And you shouldn't try to do it until you know how to do it properly, okay? It's a little tricky, and it ain't as easy as it sounds, okay? Page 5 at the top. It has three lines at the top. It says three objects, three poisons, three stores of virtue. Practice throughout the day in words. The order of takings to start with yourself. This is all pretty obscure, okay? And I want to help you. The second line, we'll start with the second line. Practice throughout the day in words. This means if you have had the teachings on how to do Tonglen, if you know how to do Tonglen, There's a very holy instruction by the First Panchen Lama especially, where you repeat the meditation in a prayer all day long. While you walk around New York, every time you look in a new person's face walking down the street, you fantasize about taking away their problems with your breath, like sucking it into your nostrils, and then destroying it immediately. That's very important to say. Every time you see, where was I? I was at Grand Central Station at 5 o'clock or 5:30, and I was watching those poor slobs come into the trains, you know, with the briefcase, you know, and they looked so, it looked like corpses, walking corpses, you know, and I felt so bad, especially having done it for 15 years. So, I can empathize, and they're walking in, and I'm looking at the faces are a little bit gray. And the whole day is written on their face, you know, like 8 or 9 or 10 or 12 hours of struggling for money and trying to do business. It's written on their face. And you can see all the worry and the pressure and the stress on their face. And then you can fantasize about taking it away from them, you see? And in New York, you have plenty of opportunities, you know. So New York is good for that. So that second line is talk all day long, you have to be muttering to yourself. Come on, give me your problems. Hey, I'll take that. Give me that. You know? And then you take that into your chest and you destroy it. Okay? You take their stress into your heart and you destroy it. Immediately. You're not supposed to keep it inside. Okay? You go. And you take it away from them. And you destroy it in your heart with a bright burst of light. And then you go. And you like practice breathing out as if your breath itself could give them some kind of happiness. You know, it could take away, give them everything they ever wished for. And this is all done in about 2 seconds as you walk past a businessman who looks like he's about to have a heart attack. You know, it's like, and he never knows. And then you do this little prayer. You do a Tonglen prayer, okay? That's what it means to do it all day long, in words. The order of takings to start with yourself. I'm not going to teach it tonight. I'm not going to go into it, but when you do Tonglen properly, you start by taking away your own suffering first. In the morning, you do a meditation to take away the suffering of Michael Roach when he's at that company in the afternoon getting screamed at by that diamond salesman, you know. So in the morning, Michael Roach, meditating in Leon's beautiful quiet space, takes away the suffering of Michael Roach at that company over in the West Village, you know, as three phone calls come in at once and the boss is screaming. you know, I take away his suffering. You start with yourself, and then later you build up to other people. Okay, and it's a beautiful meditation to do in the morning. It actually helps you in the afternoon. When the poop hits the fan, you remember that this nice guy took away your suffering, and it actually helps. Okay, and it's this whole karmic up cycle. You can learn it. We'll do it someday. We'll learn it. Okay. Okay. But what are the three objects? What are the three poisons? And what are the three stores of virtue? I'm going to put it up here in Tibetan. Say you, yiduong, mio, parma, sum. Three objects means the three things that all people in New York City on any given day are focusing on. The three things that every person in New York is focusing on at any given time. What are they? You yiduong means things you like, things that are pretty, things that are nice. Okay, could be a dress in a window. It could be a Michael and Zoe's milkshake. It could be your boss telling you you did a good job. Okay. It could be your back feeling good for one day. Okay. Myeong means the opposite. Myeong means anything you meet up with during the day that's not nice. A backache, boss screaming at you, something bad on the street, seeing something bad on the street. Okay? Anything like that. Being depressed. Okay? Anything that's not nice is called yidumyong. Parma, you know the word bardo, that means in-between state, right? Parma means the same thing. In-between, likable and unlikable. Okay? This is the other 48 people on the bus going to Howell that you could care less about. I could ask you, who was on the bus today when you came down to Howell? You say, well, there's this nice girl in the third row. And there's this guy next to me that was crushing me. The other people I can't quite remember. You see what I mean? Those are called parma. Parma means the people you could care less about. Right? Neutral. These are the three great objects. Okay? What are the three great poisons? Say chat, dung, timuksum. Chak, dung, timuksum. Chak means to like the things that are nice in an ignorant way. And punzok, if they don't put ignorant way on the homework, mark it wrong. Alright? It doesn't mean desire, anger, and ignorance, okay? I don't like those translations. It doesn't mean liking things, disliking things, and being ignorant. The Buddha likes things. The Buddha doesn't have the three poisons in his mind, okay? It doesn't mean simply liking things or being attached to things or something like that. It means ignorantly. What do you mean ignorantly? It's like being attached to something in a way that you would do something wrong to keep it. That's ignorance. Because you don't understand that this thing is being created by your own mind. That proves you don't understand it. If you would hurt somebody to get it. That proves you don't understand where it came from. Okay? Because where do all good things come from? Helping other people. So it's a contradiction of terms to hurt someone else to get what you want. That proves you're not a Buddhist. That proves you're ignorant. It proves you don't understand worldview. If you would hurt someone else to get what you want. It's shooting your own toes. Okay? Okay. Dung is disliking things ignorantly. Okay? Does the Buddha dislike things? Of course. What does the Buddha dislike? He doesn't want to see you to go to hell. He doesn't want to go to hell himself either. He dislikes things, but not ignorantly. Okay? Disliking things ignorantly means you would hurt someone to get away from something you don't like. You would kill the roaches to get them out of your apartment. Okay? It's by definition a stupid thing to do. It creates the vicious circle. Okay? Timug is the state of ignorance that doesn't get it. Timug doesn't get what I just talked about. Okay. Now, last thing. It says three stores of virtue. What are the three virtues that you can get out of these six stupid things? Okay? Six crummy things have come already. Now he's talking about three nice things. At this point in the meditation, you take away those three poisons from other people. Get it? Now, if you read that line, you'll never get it. You see, look at the line and tell me that's what it means. You'll never get it. At this point, in the practice of this lojong, you're supposed to be sucking in the three poisons from other people as they focus on the three objects. Things they like, things they don't like, and things that they don't care about. Okay. At this point in the meditation, you are sucking it in. Give me your desire. Give me your hatred. Let me take your ignorance, please. Okay? Buddhists are snuffing other stuff, right? Other people's problems, all right? Better than that other stuff. Okay? And by doing so, you get incredible virtues, which are the opposite of these three poisons. And that's what the three roots of virtue are. Okay? If the homework said, write the three stores of virtue in Tibetan, you could just put a negative on this one here. You could cop out that way, and you'd be right. Okay? Especially if it was 9:30. Okay. Last thing. There's a line that's a little hard. By the way, page 5, where it says, the blame all belongs to one person. You know who they're talking about. I don't have to mention it. Okay? You know, I used to go to Rinpoche and complain about stuff. You know, I'd say, this guy yelled at me at work. He says, if you don't like it, you keep your vows better. You know, if you're sick and tired of getting yelled at work, you keep your tunduk. Don't come to me whining. Conversations with Rinpoche are very short. You know? You know? As you may have noticed, you know? People say, Rinpoche, give me some advice. You know, what should I do? I want to make an appointment to see you. He says, I don't give appointments. I taught you Lam Rim for 12 years. You do the right thing, you know. You figure it out. That's why I taught you for 12 years, okay? All right. Page 6 at the top. See the deception as being four bodies. Emptiness is the matchless protector. This is supposed to be the step on how to learn to use problems as a spiritual path, okay? You know what the deception is now, okay? Deception means it looks like if you lie, you can get some money. It looks like if you kill the roaches, they'll leave your apartment. It looks like if you could get the guy in trouble at work, everything would be all right for you. That's a deception. A negative action cannot lead to a positive result, according to Buddhism and according to Jesus and a lot of other people, okay? Can't do a bad thing and have a good thing happen from it. If you lie, someone will lie to you in the future. It has nothing to do with getting the money or not getting the money. Prove it. Because it doesn't always work. Wake up. Okay? What are the four bodies? He's talking mainly about the Dharmakaya. What is the Dharmakaya? Buddha has four bodies, right? There's that foxy body that stays up in the paradise. White light. Long black hair. I'm just going to get enlightened so I don't have a bald spot anymore, you know? Okay? I mean, that's the first thing. Sending bodies all over the universe to whoever needs it. You could look like a dog, you could look like a bridge, you could look like anything. Okay? Nirmanakaya. So we have Svabhavakaya, Sambhogakaya, and then Nirmanakaya. Okay? The paradise body, and then the emanation body. Okay? What's the third body? Their omniscience, their state of mind. But when this text says four bodies, he's really talking about body number four, which is Dharmakaya. What is the Dharmakaya? Hey, it's the emptiness of the other three. Okay? It's the emptiness of the other three. It's the fact that the body you have now and the mind you have now could have been that foxy paradise body, could have been the body that was emanated to thousands of planets at once, could have been the omniscience of a Buddha if you had gotten your act together earlier. Okay? That's the emptiness of those three bodies. Okay? You have those three bodies in a sense now because they're empty. Your body can change to that body. Your mind can change to that mind. And it's the emptiness of that that makes it possible. That is the Buddha nature. That is called Sangye Kyurek, Sugatagarbha. That is the Buddha nature that you have. The fact that those are empty. Okay. So what can really protect you? What's the real refuge? Emptiness. And that's what the next line means, okay? You can bow down to paintings of the Buddha, won't help you. There were no more paintings of the Buddha in the world than in the 5,000 Tibetan monasteries. It got burnt to the ground. Didn't protect them, okay? The pictures cannot protect you, okay? A million monks and nuns killed or forced to disrobe, okay? Wearing the robe doesn't protect you, okay? It's the emptiness that protects you. It's understanding emptiness, okay? If you understand that your world and your body and your mind are empty, and that any bad thing that comes to you is a projection of your own mind forced on you by your past karma, what will be your natural reaction? I have to keep my vows now. I got to learn bodhisattva vows. I have to learn pratimoksha vows. I have to learn tantric vows and keep them. And then I won't have these problems. And then the emptiness of the world will be my savior, because the fact that it's blank and what I see is projected by my mind, that can save me. You know, people ask me, what am I supposed to think when the boss screams at me? First thing, emptiness. Okay? He didn't have to be screaming. He could have been coming in to give you a raise. And he would have been if you had kept your vows last week or something like that. Okay? Seriously. Okay? Emptiness is the only protection. Okay? And that's that line. That's the meaning of that line. Those are all the nasty lines. Okay? You can figure out the other lines, I think. All right? We'll do some prayers and then we'll leave quickly because I'm a little bit over, okay?
Sasi Bhagi Jusine Tokshan Vira Vinci Nyamde Kempadi Sange Shindu Mite Uwagi Jogu Nanda Shingva
Class 4. You have been listening to Lojong, Developing the Good Heart with Geshe Michael Roach, presented by the Asian Classics Institute. The Asian Classics Institute is dedicated to preserving the pure teachings and practice of Buddhism. For a listing of other topics available, write to the Asian Classics Institute, P.O. Box 20373, New York, New York, 10009, or call 212-475-7752.